You're listening to audio from Cities Church. You can find more resources and learn about our ministry by visiting citieschurch.com.
Last weekend, Pastor Michael and I took our daughters to see Frozen on Ice. Now, let's just say that we were not the only daddy-daughter pairs at the Target Center last Saturday. There's something about Disney princesses with ice skating that makes for an almost irresistible daddy-daughter pairing. Few events have changed me like having a daughter. Megan and I first became parents to twin boys, and then 4 years later, I had this strange and wonderful experience of having a daughter. Nothing has quite changed my father's heart like this, and perhaps it's all the more significant because I did not expect this. I remember very distinctly, while we were pregnant with Gloria, and did not know yet whether it be a boy or a girl, and Pastor Michael said to me, "Hope it's a girl. You need a daughter." And I said inside my head, nope. We got boy toys. We got boy clothes. I like to play ball. We do boy things. And daughters grow up to be teenage girls. I'm scared to be a dad of a teenage girl. But Michael was right. It's been really good for me to have a daughter. Daughters are good for daddies. When God made us male and female, he put into motion four distinct and special relationships between parents and their children. There's the father-son relationship. There's the mother-daughter relationship, the mother-son relationship, and the father-daughter relationship. And because men and women are gloriously not the same, but complementary, and because boys and girls from the beginning are not the same, we often find distinct, subtle, and powerful aspects to the love shared between father-daughter, father-son, mother-son, mother-daughter, these special relationships. Strangely enough, Jesus honors all four with healings in the Gospels. There's the father's love for his son, Mark chapter 9. We'll get there in a few weeks in our exposition, a few months. A father brings his son who has a spirit that makes him mute. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him down. He foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. The disciples try their hand at the exorcism, but they fail. Then Jesus steps in, casts out the demon, and restores the son to his father. There's a mother's love for her son. This is the story in Luke 7 of the widow at Nain. A young man dies, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. Jesus sees her weeping, and he feels compassion for her. And so he approaches the body and he says, "Young man, I say to you, arise." And the young man sits up and begins to talk. And Jesus gives the boy back to his mom. And then there's a mother's love for her daughter. This is the Syrophoenician woman. This is Mark chapter 7. We'll be there eventually. She's a Gentile woman. A Gentile mother begs Jesus to cast out the demon from her daughter. And then Jesus says, "Let the children, the Jews, let the children be fed first before the dogs, the Gentiles." Instead of being offended, she responds with beautiful, humble boldness. She says, "Lord, even the dogs under the table get to eat the children's crumbs." And Jesus says, "For this, you may go your way. The demon has left your daughter." So he gives a daughter back to a mother. And in this morning, we get to see Jesus give a daughter back to her father. This past month, Billy Graham died. Famous evangelist at the age of 99. Some people say perhaps the most famous or influential Christian of the 20th century, at least in America. At his death, people praised Billy profusely, and they should have. That's appropriate at his death. In the Christian media, talked about all he'd accomplished. how many thousands, perhaps millions, had come to Jesus because of Billy's influence and his many crusades. Not many people offered criticisms at the point of his death. That's good. That's a bad time to criticize somebody. However, we live in a fallen world. We know these figures, especially us as Christians, we know apart from Jesus, humans aren't perfect. And so it feels fitting for us to appropriately point out the shortcomings or the weaknesses. And there was an article in Christianity Today that caught my attention that did just that. It was called "Little Girls Need Their Daddy." To fulfill his calling, his sense of calling, Billy Graham was away from home a lot. He was away from home more than he was home. And the article quoted two of his daughters. He had three daughters, quoted two of them, the oldest named Gigi, the youngest named Ruth. Quote from Gigi: "It's very difficult for me to separate who he was as a person and as a father. He belonged to the world. But I do remember crying in the bathtub, wishing I had a normal daddy." Then Ruth said this. She said, "He parented me from a distance. He loved us, but he just wasn't around." Looking back, Ruth says, she remarried quickly after a divorce against her parents' wishes, and she said she did so because I was just so eager for someone to take care of me. Gigi said, "A lot of my insecurities came from the fact that he just wasn't there." And then Ruth said, use that same word, insecurities. Ruth said, "I have a lot of insecurities and lack of self-confidence, perhaps because little girls need their daddy. They say your view of God is shaped by your view of your father. I guess I saw God that way, that he loved me, but that he was really busy with more important things." There's been a lot of pain there. And it was healing. That's not where they ended up. That's not how they said at the funeral. There was healing as well. And this morning, as we focus on a daddy's love for his daughter, I'm aware this touches a painful nerve for many in this room. That's not outside of my awareness. Maybe you want so badly as a daddy or as a mommy to have a daughter. You ache for a daughter, and God hasn't yet given you that daughter. Well, perhaps you would say with Billy Graham's daughters, "Little girls need their daddy. I know this because I didn't have a good daddy. He wasn't there for me." Or, "He was there, and it was terrible when he was there." And so you would say with Billy Graham's daughters that little girls and little boys need a mommy's specific love and affection and care, and need a daddy's love and affection and care. So I know we're already in the middle here. I don't usually pray in the middle, but I want to pray that for you this morning as we proceed, that God would do some measures of healing and would help us through this story of this daddy and his little girl. Father in heaven, we live in a society that is confused and is hurt by the failures of men, and in particular, by the failures of fathers. And so, Father, I pray that you would do some healing this morning. Would you help us? For those of us who are daddies, we are so aware of our failures. None of us are perfect daddies. And so we ask for your help. Would you heal us? Would you make us more like your son? And then, Father, for those of us, men and women, who have been hurt by the lack or by the ill treatment of our fathers, Father, would you heal? You can do healing. You are not beyond this kind of healing. And I pray you'd be pleased to help us even here this morning. In Jesus' name we pray. So when a father named Jairus approaches Jesus here at the beginning of the story, he falls to his knees and he pleads for Jesus' help. And the first thing he says is, "My little daughter." He doesn't just say, "Jesus, my daughter." He says, "Jesus, my little daughter." is about to die. She needs your help. It's when he says little daughter, not just daughter. This is a term of endearment. This is a single word in the original. It's a term of endearment. He's showing us his father's heart and special care. He's giving us a glimpse into his affection for his daughter, which is not the same as a father's affection for a son. It's distinct. There's a subtle but important difference in saying, my son, or saying, my little daughter, or just saying, my child. There's a particular kind of love and affection between a good, godly father and his daughter, whatever her age. Age 3, age 12, grown woman. We would be foolish to try to rank a father's love for son against father's love for daughter. It's not supposed to be ranked. This is not rankings. It's not what one's better than the other. They're distinct, and they're both beautiful and essential. A father loves a son as someone who, at least with respect to masculinity, is just like me. God has entrusted me to raise up this child to learn self-sacrifice and to learn humble initiative, to cultivate a heart that leads and provides for and protects women and children. And a father loves a daughter as someone who is not just like me. God has entrusted me to raise this little girl to be like the most important person in my life, my wife. I not only want to model for her self-sacrificial masculinity, but I want her to learn from me what it's like to appropriately affirm and receive and be cared for by a worthy Christ-like man. And it's tricky to draw the emotional lines too starkly. I don't want to pretend that we can do that without some kind of reductionism. But there are typical distinctions between a mother's care and a father's care. That's how God made it. It's wonderful. The Apostle Paul gives us a little glimpse of this in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Maybe you're aware of that text. In verse 7, he talks about a mother's care. And then just 4 verses later, he talks about a father's care. Let me read for you 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7. We were gentle among you. He's talking to the Thessalonians. Gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. And then, on the complementary other hand, 4 verses later, like a father with his children, we exhorted you, each one of you, and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God. So he gives these general attributes of feminine gentleness and masculine strength or masculine encouragement. They have their distinct expressions as well with a daughter, with a son. I think there's a helpful pattern here in the way that God created the world. It's so in Genesis 1, 6 days. The first 3 days, if you want to summarize it, he essentially forms the world. And then days 4 to 6, he fills the world. And those, reductionistically, are helpful categories for the orientation of men and women in his creation. Men do forming. Women do filling. Men are builders. And women are beautifiers. To put it in the language of 2 Thessalonians 2, men are namers, and women are nursers and nurturers. And with a daddy-daughter relationship, daddy is charged to build a beautifier. With a son, daddy builds a builder. With a daughter, daddy builds a beautifier. It's an amazing thing for a daughter and for a daddy. And Jesus, in this story, picks up on Jairus' term of affection where he says, my little daughter. When they finally get to the house, and Jesus sits down on the bedside to raise Jairus' daughter, Jesus says, little girl. So this is one of these terms of endearment. Little girl, I say to you, arise. That's verse 41. Not just girl. Little girl. This is an expression of Jesus' fatherly heart of compassion and holy condescension and care. And we learn later on here, she's 12 years old. We don't typically think of 12-year-olds today as little girls. But in the first century, 12 is on the brink of being marriageable. This little girl is a term of endearment from Jesus, just as the Father said it. My little daughter, verse 23. Little girl, verse 41. Expressions of a tender, affectionate, even protective father's heart. And as a daddy of two daughters now, I can't help but hear that affection when Jairus rolls up and says, Jesus, my little daughter, help my little daughter. Now, 2 weeks ago, we saw Jesus' power over nature at the end of Mark chapter 4. He made a great storm into a great calm with just a word. Then last Sunday, we saw Jesus' power over demons in the first half of Mark chapter 5. And now this morning, turn to the second part of Mark chapter 5, and we see Jesus' power over disease first, and then climactically, we see his power over death itself. And as he does this, as he calms the sea, as he casts out demons, as he heals disease, as he raises the little girl from the dead, he's showing us who he is. That was the end of the story in Mark chapter 4, verse 41. The disciples ask, who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? You know what Mark chapter 5 is going to show us? Who he is. These stories are revealing to us, who is this Galilean carpenter with these disciples who stands up and calms the sea with a word? And now we have the healing of the woman, the raising of the little girl, and these stories are tied together. We can't pull them apart. We had to read a long text this morning because they're woven together. And there's differences in the stories. You got an old woman and a young girl. You've got a girl who's dying right now, and you've got a woman who has a chronic condition and has suffered much for a long time. You have one who is healed related to her father's faith, and you have another who is healed with respect to her own faith. So there's differences. But the real punch in the mingling of these two stories together is the similarities. Several different things, some minor things that are similar. They're both female. They are linked together by 12 years. The woman's had her condition 12 years. The little girl, we find out later, is 12 years old. Both are ceremonially unclean in the Jewish religion. The woman, because of her flow of blood, Luke 15, and the girl, because she's dead. Jesus isn't supposed to touch either of them. And yet Jesus touches them both. And when he touches them, instead of him becoming unclean, they become clean. It's a powerful glimpse into Jesus' life by the Spirit that does what the law cannot do, weak as it was through the flesh, God did, Romans 8:3. Jesus is eclipsing Old Testament religion as he heals these unclean women. And then in both stories, Jesus is misunderstood. His disciples misunderstand him. When he stops to talk to the woman, they're like, Jesus, why are you stopping? This girl's about to die. And then when he gets to the house, there are these paid mourners. This is why they turn to laughter so quickly. They're paid mourners. And Jesus says, the girl's sleeping, and they laugh at him. Two times Jesus is misunderstood on this journey of healing. But what I want to do now for the rest of our time is to briefly look at three major similarities between the two stories. The three big things, I think, that link these stories together and why they give us such a powerful glimpse into who God is by their pairing together. So the first one is our need for help. There is a need for help in both of these accounts. The Gospel of Mark tells us about 13 different such people who come to Jesus for help. Sometimes the word uses supplicants. They are coming to ask for Jesus' help. And the picture again and again in the Gospel of Mark is Jesus with his disciples watching, they're with him. The Pharisees and leaders are in the distance, glaring, overhearing, watching what he's doing. And then someone in need comes to him, often falls down before him in desperation, and asks for his help, that he would heal them, an unclean spirit, or a leper, or a paralytic, or a man with a withered hand, or a demonized man, or a father, or a woman, come before Jesus and demonstrate the kind of desperation and humility that Mark wants all of us to have. The reason he's doing this over and over again, he wants us, the reader, to put ourselves in the shoe of these 13 supplicants who are coming to Jesus for help, desperate, humble, in need of his help. Both Jairus and the woman are desperate. Jairus' daughter is dying. That's clearly desperate enough. And don't miss the woman's pain. She has suffered much for a long time. Don't overlook her pain just because the girl's dying. Jesus doesn't treat her pain lightly. And Mark doesn't treat her pain lightly. Look at verse 26. She had suffered much under many physicians and spent all she had and was no better but grew worse. Mark lingers over her pain for us. Much suffering, many physicians. She spent all she had. She was no better, but even worse. Jesus doesn't relativize our pain. He doesn't look at your situation and say, buck up. You're not dying. Your daughter's not dying. He has an ear for your pain. He enters into your situation. He hears your pain on its terms. And he's ready to step in and heal and demonstrate his heart of compassion. So both the old woman and the little girl show us our need before Jesus. We have a chronic condition called sin. It means delighting in other things in a way that dishonors God. And we ourselves are on the brink of death and need his rescue. A just death by God's just wrath, because it is outrageous to dishonor God, who's the most valuable person in the universe. And Mark means for us to be on our knees before Jesus, like Jairus, and to be willing to do whatever we can, like the woman, so that we can get to Jesus. So the first major connection between the two is their desperation, our need for Jesus' help. Number two, Jesus' means of grace. His means of grace. He doesn't raise the girl because Jairus kneeled. And he doesn't heal the woman because she reached out and touched him. Jesus makes clear and explicit in both cases that the instrument of his grace is faith. And Mark puts it right at the heart of the two stories. Verses 34, 35, and 36. This is the hinge. This is the heart of the two stories. We'll come back here in just a minute. But in verse 34, Jesus says to the woman, your faith has made you well. And then to Jairus in verse 36, he says, do not fear, only believe. To the woman, it is not your superstition that has made you well. It's not that you managed to touch my garment and there's some kind of magic in it. That is not, it's not what you did that got you saved. Your faith has made you well, he says to the woman. I suspect we are all more superstitious than we want to freely admit. And the little things we do, suspecting this will endear us to God in certain ways. My wife called me out on a silly superstition just a few months ago. A year ago, I had grown out my facial hair. I'm reluctant to call it a beard. In November, and then I kept it through December until Clemson played in the national championship and won the national championship. Then I shaved my beard. And so this November, you know, with the men, no shave November. Got to the end of November and I thought, well, one time in my life, I've grown my face out and Clemson won the national championship. We're going to let this thing ride another month. And my wife said, No. Clemson's hard enough for me. The beard's hard enough for me. Please don't put those two together, all right? If you're going to keep the facial hair, it's not about Clemson. She was right. She called me out. It was silly. How would I do such a silly thing? So silly. We're all prone to superstition like that.
And to us, Jesus said, is not your superstition that made you well. Your faith has made you well. And then he says to Jairus, when word comes that his daughter has already died and his daddy's heart is in shambles and he is about to totally fall to pieces, Jesus says, do not fear, only believe. Can you imagine how Jairus feels at this moment? While his little daughter is dying, Jesus stops to have a conversation with an old woman with a chronic condition. Is Jairus not thinking, come on, Jesus, you can come find her. My daughter's dying. Come find the old woman afterwards. She's had this condition a long time. She'll still have it in a few hours. Come find her later. Jairus is rushing to get there. The disciples are rushing to get there, but Jesus always has time. It's my favorite sentence, one of my favorite sentences in the Jesus Storybook Bible. In this story, which my daughter Gloria loves, she always says, Daddy, read about the sick girl. Read about the sick girl. She loves the story. And that the line in the story, after Jesus stops to talk to the woman, is Jesus always has time. When Jairus is tempted to fear and he's tempted to fall into pieces because his daughter is dead, there is some vital information he doesn't have yet. Which is why Jesus says, only believe. Trust me. I have this under my control. Jairus doesn't know it yet, but he is with the man who's God himself. Just stay with Jesus. Don't leave Jesus. Jairus is with the right person at the right time. He doesn't need to have all the details. Do not fear, only believe. So there's our need. There's Jesus' means of our healing and our saving, which is faith. And then third and finally is a father's heart for his daughter. You can see why I started where I did. Jesus allows only Peter, James, and John to come with him to raise the little girl. This is like the transfiguration that's coming in Mark chapter 9, which we'll see. Only Peter, James, and John. And when they come at the transfiguration, they get a sneak peek into who Jesus really is. Not only as a great teacher, but as God himself. And he brings those same three here. He gives them the sneak peek ahead of time into who he really is. Perhaps the reason that we're not shocked today by this story is that we've heard it before. We already know Jesus raised the girl. We already know that Jesus raises himself. So we're not surprised that Jesus raises a girl from the dead when we know that Jesus himself has already been resurrected. However, we need to linger just a minute and put ourselves in the shoes of the original audience and of Peter, James, and John, and of the parents. There has been no resurrections from the dead yet at this point. Like, they are totally surprised with what he does. Verse 42, this is how it reads literally, verse 42. They were astonished with great amazement. This is an astounding display of power and of identity. So not only does this Jesus command unclean spirits and they obey him, but he rules over death itself. He shows us here ahead of time that his father has the power over the final enemy, and so much so that Jesus is able to treat death like it's merely sleep. Here comes a little girl. Little girl, it's time to get up. Jesus can defeat death just like it's rising from sleep. Which is why his interaction with the older woman is so remarkable. He pauses, he turns around. Who touched me? And when she falls down before him and she tells him the whole truth, he doesn't rebuke her. But he shows her a father's heart for his daughter. He says, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace be healed of your disease. Daughter, just as Jairus has shown us the unique tenderness and compassion of a father's heart with his little daughter, now Jesus shows us his heart and the father's heart for one of his daughters. Look at verses 34 and 35. I told you this was the hinge. Mark wants to make this connection explicit for us. So in verse 34, Jesus calls the woman daughter. And then in the next sentence, a messenger comes from Jairus' house to inform him, Jairus, your daughter is dead. It's not just 12-year-old girls who need to know the love and delight of their father. Grown women need to know their father's delight as well. I do think the women among us should be encouraged by this double story in Mark chapter 5 about healing an old woman from the pain of her disease and healing a young woman from the jaws of death. Sisters at City's Church, Jesus cares about you. He calls you daughter. No matter how much your father failed you, if you had a great father or a terrible father, no matter how much you've been hurt or mistreated, your condition, as ashamed or unashamed as you might be about it, does not disqualify you from his concern. He looks on you with compassion, with the special love that a father has for a daughter. And he says, you can trust me. I can make you well. I can heal your chronic condition called sin. I'll save you from the final enemy called death. If you will just take my hand, not even death itself can capture you. And one day, I'll say to you, honey, it's time to get up. And you'll awake as from sleep, and there will be no more tears, no more sorrow, no more pain, because the former things will have passed away. And men, it's not just women who need to know they're loved like a daughter. All who are in Christ receive the Father's love for sons and for cherished daughters. The peculiar kind of loving condescension and deep compassion and personal delight and fierceness to protect that a good father feels for his daughter is what God made all of us, even men, to receive from our heavenly Father. So in Jairus' heart for his daughter, and in Jesus' heart for this woman, we catch a glimpse of God's father-daughter love for his people, alongside the other distinct kinds of love. He looks on us with compassion, with affection, with protection, like a daddy for my little daughter. And it is so good for men and for women alike to know ourselves loved by God like a good father loves his daughter, and better. Ask the musicians to come and the pastors. As we come to the table here, I'm going to mention just quickly two little foreshadowings here in this story. In verse 30, when the woman touched Jesus, Jesus perceived that the power had gone out from him. Power must go out from Jesus for the woman to be healed. And this is where Jesus' life is heading, to the cross, where all the power is going to go out from him to the point of death that we might be saved. And then, of course, you know the second little foreshadowing. Jesus will not stay dead. When he heals this little girl, He's showing us ahead of time God's hand. That's why he only lets the three disciples and the parents come see this. He's showing the cards here. This is ahead of time. The public can't see this. Because of his compassion, he's going to do ahead of time here a kind of healing that will reveal him and will show that death itself cannot hold Jesus. He has the power of death, and he will rise again. So this meal is for the members of City's Church, first and foremost. But if you're here with us today, and you would say, I embrace the Father, I receive his love that I see in the person of Jesus, I claim Jesus as my Savior, my Lord, my treasure, we'd invite you to eat here with us. We'll distribute the bread first. Here's a gluten-free option if you put up your hand. His body is the true bread. Let us serve you.